Hello and welcome to The Preservationist, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomist Ray, the Vice President and a board member at the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and I'm the host of The Preservationist. Today, we will be discussing the history, architecture, and stories of the Liberty Theater. I am joined by Jennifer Crockett, the Executive Director of the Liberty Theater, and my co-host, Eric Wheeler, an architectural historian. Jennifer, can I have you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Jennifer Crockett. I'm the Executive Director of Liberty Restoration, Inc., which is the nonprofit that owns and operates the historic Liberty Theater complex.
And how long have you been with the Liberty Theater for?
I started towards the end of 2016. I moved to Astoria in 2015 and was commuting back and forth from Portland, playing and teaching clarinet. I happened to go to a show at the Liberty Theater, and it was before they were hiring. And while I was there, I was struck by there were no posters. There were no marketing materials for upcoming shows. The show, it was a fantastic show, and there were maybe 40 people there. And I was just, I had this overwhelming need to get people in this theater. So when I saw they were hiring, I had no theater experience, and I reached out and got the job.
Amazing. Well, we're glad to have you. Thank you for coming on the show. And then, Eric, if I can have you introduce what you do with the Liberty Theater.
Yeah. I am Eric Wheeler. I'm an architectural historian, and actually I'm also a board member of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society. And I am one of three guides that are currently offering inside tours of the Liberty Theater. We started back in July. And it's been very successful. And I think part of the appeal is that people really get a chance to get a close-up, personal look and get backstage and hear some of the stories. So it's really been a delight.
Yeah. And prior to July, were there previously architectural history tours before?
Not really. We do tours for donors, and we've done, we've dabbled in tours, but really it was Eric reaching out to us with his specific background and suggesting this type of tour. And it's fantastic. Other theaters do them. When I travel, I go and see other historic theaters and take their tours. So we're really glad that we can offer it.
Now, one thing that you do take a deep dive into during the Liberty Theater tours is the history of the architecture and how it was created with the revitalization after the Great Fire of 1922. Would you be able to discuss a little bit of the history on what that revitalization was like?
So two theater owners that operated a chain throughout the Pacific Northwest, Jensen and von Herberg, had the idea to put a theater in Astoria. The civic leaders after the fire had kind of come together, and the arts, you know, have led revitalizations for centuries. And there was not a gathering place after the fire. Before the fire, we had so many parades and so much live theater and music around town, and there was a void after the fire. And so Jensen and von Herberg reached out to Bennis and Herzog, the architect firm. And our sister theaters are the Baghdad and the Hollywood Theater in Portland. You can still see a lot of the same details throughout the two. The Hollywood has been, their interior has been renovated kind of a lot, but you can still see the same arches and windows. So they came together with this idea to build this gathering space. They knew they wanted it to be fancy. It was a Venetian-themed vaudeville and film house. What I find remarkable is from idea to opening was less than a year. Can you even imagine that these days? Government works a lot slower. But at that time, they really wanted to get this going. And the Liberty, when it opened on April 4th, 1925, it was hailed as an emblem of the city's recovery from the fire. The Liberty Theaters, too, historically, at that time, it was popular to name your theater Liberty because of, we were coming out of World War I fairly recently. So there are actually three Liberty Theaters in Oregon alone. Our blade sign out front, the Liberty Blade, is shaped like a candle. of, you know, leading us, providing light after darkness. And also flanking our proscenium on the stage are Tudor roses woven into latticework. And that was a symbol of peace and innocence. So again, you see these pieces that are emblematic of recovery after fire, but also of, you know, emerging out of World War I.
So that reconstruction took less than a year?
It was less than a year.
Wow.
The architects, they had their final planning meeting from, so a lot of our information is shared, this really wonderful pamphlet called At Liberty by Matthew Stadler. And we have copies of that at the Liberty. So if anybody would like to, we have digital copies that we're happy to share. But from, I think it was May 2024 to April 2025, that's all it took to plan, build, and open this theater.
Yeah, and earlier you did mention about the arts being so alive in this area. Can you tell me a little bit about, was that always the case? Were the arts always having a need to have this Liberty Theater?
Yeah, there was what we sort of have called the old Liberty Theater. That was where McDonald's now is. And we had, I've heard and I've read, within that 6-week window of our now Liberty Theater opening, there were 6 other theaters in this area. And so a lot of them, and you know, this is pre-Netflix, so a lot more people went to theaters during those days. We're the only one that has survived. The popularity of art and the civic leaders at the time seeing just the economic revitalization. How do you rebuild a downtown? You build a gathering place that people go to, and it creates, you know, people eat in restaurants and they stay in hotels and they shop in the shops. And so the arts a lot of times leads that.
I 100% agree with that statement. And when you stop and take a look at the Liberty Theater and how visually stunning it is, both exterior and especially interior, is there a specific architectural style we can classify the Liberty Theater as?
In the 1920s, across America, what we call period revival styles were really popular. The Tudor revival and the Gothic revival and the Classical revival and the Mission revival and so forth. So the Liberty Theater fits in really chronologically and aesthetically into that time period of the movie palaces of the 1920s. In the early 20s, and as Jennifer pointed out, the Liberty Theater was built as a vaudeville house with silent movies. And silent movies, by the even in the early 20s, still fairly new technology. So that live act was really an important part of it. And of course, there was a pit orchestra in the early days and an organ. So it was a very different scene than within the next 10 years, actually less than 10 years, as talkies came out. Of course, that made a big impact. So as Jennifer pointed out, the Liberty Theater is more than bricks and mortar. I mean, it's the architectural crown jewel of downtown Astoria, but the social role historically of theaters in general, and certainly after the fire, after the rebuild, after the opening of the Liberty Theater in 1925, a very, very important part of the social life here in Astoria. And it continues to be historically the Liberty Theater. And its opening day, you've seen pictures perhaps, there are automobiles up and down on Commercial and 12th Street, the people in the streets celebrating the opening. And so it continues today to be this pivotal building. As you look at the exterior, it's sort of like Bennison Herzog, the architects, kind of took the vocabulary of Greco-Roman architecture and just threw it up on the wall. I mean, it's very symmetrical and it's very attractive, but they didn't miss a thing. There's Palladian windows, and there's fleur-de-lis, and there's fluted columns, and there's torches. I mean, it's really over the top. Interestingly, they finished the Liberty before the Hollywood in Portland. And for those of you that have seen the Hollywood Theater, that is over the top. And so I think in some ways the Liberty Theater is a little more restrained in the exterior. And the beautiful thing from an architecture standpoint is that the interior, as Jennifer said, that Venetian style, that neoclassical Northern Italian Renaissance style, carries right through to the interior. And we are so fortunate to have that intact, because many of the theaters have lost that. The building is still there. They've restored the exterior. But the original elements are either restored or replicated on the interior of the theater. So it really is, it's both a movie palace and it's an architectural landmark. So just to put it in a box, sort of, the exterior looks much more Spanish colonial revival, because you have stucco exterior, you got the stucco columns and the red tile roof. And I often say red tile roof, stucco exterior, Spanish colonial revival or Mediterranean revival. So that would be both a combination of Mediterranean revival on the exterior and neoclassical on the interior. Yeah.
Yeah. And when we think of those things, it brings up the question of how has the Liberty Theater evolved over time? You know, it's very known that they went through some revitalization in 2005 and even a little bit more recently as well in 2020. Was that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so how has the Liberty evolved with all those changes? How does it maintain its historic integrity with that?
That's a great question. I think, you know, we are unique in that both our exterior and our interior are on the National Register. So a lot of the decisions we make to the historic facade or the interior are guided by, you know, the State Historic Preservation Office and historians around the area. John Gutenberger has certainly played a huge role, Michael Foster. So, and then we also have this added layer of theatrical innovation. And so we work with consultants. We're part of the League of Historic American Theaters. I'm a board member on the League. There are architects that we've had come out and consultants to help us make decisions on how to present the best show we possibly can while also honoring our heritage and protecting our historic theater. So, you know, there's things like we upgraded all of our exterior lighting to LED during 2020. That lowers our carbon footprint. It lowers our operating costs. You know, actually, I don't know that you would really be able to tell if you were to look at the exterior and say, wow, that's LED. To me, it makes us a little bit brighter. We stand out a little bit more. Interior lighting, a lot of our chandeliers have been converted to LED. They've made huge strides over the years with the technology. Theatrical lighting is still very much based in incandescent lighting. Just it behaves a lot more predictable and it's warmer. We do have some LED theatrical lighting, but, you know, we're waiting for the industry to catch up. And also things like ADA accessibility. You have to make sure that you, you have areas of the theater that are accessible to everyone. And how do you work that into your historic design? As we start to work on our stage renovations that are, you know, hopefully going to begin in 2025, that's something that we've really been talking about is we have a typical 1925 stage that is very small. How do you incorporate ramps when you don't have the rise and run to be able to do so? And you also can't make giant structural changes to your historic theater. So a lot of theaters are having those conversations.
And you do consult outside sources. Do you have any inside sources as well? Like, does the board help out at all with any decisions like that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we have a we've got a building committee that is extremely active. Everyone on the building committee has been recruited from either the board or around town. We have builders, our former city manager is on it. We have project managers that have dealt specifically in construction. Some of them are in historic preservation, and then there's a mix of staff too. So I really strive to be surrounded by people that know or have more experience than me. And I think that makes for a really well-run theater.
And we have done some upgrades to the Liberty Theater pretty recently, correct?
We did some upgrades to the theater during 2020. So as everyone knows, we were in a phased capital campaign that we kicked off in 2018 and then wrapped up in February of 2020. We raised just under $2 million to enclose the vestibule out front and build a better box office and also build a concession stand. And all three of those pieces were guided by our consultants, friends from League of Historic American Theaters, they came through and they did a 60-point checklist of everything we could do to get the Liberty up to industry standard. We had been battling for a while on, you know, concession sales should be 10 to 12% of your budget. Ours were less than 1%. Our patrons were having to wait out in the rain before shows because the box office was on the other side of the street. Every time a logging truck went by during a classical show, you could hear it rumble. Every time we opened the front doors, our HVAC, just all of the air just were sucked out of the front of the building. Using that checklist, we were able to make a priority list and also make mindful decisions along the way of how can we make it a better customer experience by, again, honoring our history, not really making any huge changes, just innovating a little bit. This next summer, starting, I think, as soon as the rain stops this year, we just received a large gift to waterproof and rejuvenate our exterior and put two new roofs on the building. So that is exciting and starting. I think most of the time when people imagine the Liberty Theater, the image of our exterior in their mind is beautiful, but you get up close and there are ferns growing from cracks all the way up the building. You know, the paint has bubbled and cracked and pulled water in. We've got 18 leak spots throughout the building. So we're really excited to, we are literally turning the clock back 100 years on the exterior of the theater, fixing our sidewalks, filling our cracks, repainting. It is going to look magnificent. And then the moment that is finished, we turn our attention back to the stage. Our stage is very 1925. It's a small vaudeville thrust stage. We are going to make it a little bit wider, make our backstage a little more efficient. We're adding rigging. Right now, we don't do a lot of theatrical productions because we are unable to fly scenery. So we don't have direct load in. Everything needs to be handed down 5 feet from the street level to the stage. So we get turned down a lot for touring productions, which is why we mostly do music and comedy and spoken word and a little bit of dance. The technical capabilities of our stage have really hamstrung us over the last 7 or 8 years that we've wanted to really do theatrical productions. The package that we're proposing looks great, and we'll be able to do one truck shows like Rent or Hairspray or Officer and a Gentleman. How exciting would that be? That's kind of our 2 to 3 year plan for the theater.
We'll return to our guests, Jennifer Crockett and Eric Wheeler, in just a moment. But first, I'd like to invite you to this month's Topics in Preservation. Topics in Preservation is a monthly gathering for Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, to share ideas and discuss topics related to historic preservation. This event is free and open to the public. This month, we'll be exploring the world of flooring in historic homes. From repairing, refinishing, and replacing to cleaning and maintaining wood, tiles, and more. Join us at 6 p.m. at the LCPS office on the corner of 12th and Duane, the first floor of the Hotel Elliott. Bring your questions, comments, advice, and stories. Show and tell is always encouraged. We hope to see you there. That's happening this Wednesday, April 17th at 6 p.m. at the LCPS office, 389 12th Street, downtown Astoria. And back to Jennifer and Eric. One thing that is special that's coming up about the Liberty is its birthday. When is the Liberty Theater's birthday officially?
Officially, it's April 4th. We are celebrating it on April 20th with a Roaring Twenties jazz band coming and room to dance and food and drink. It's also special in April. We just celebrated our Kids Make Theater children's program's first public birthday. So we've had over 700 registrations for the children's theater in a year. The last 99 years have done really well, and we can't wait to go into the next 100.
And with the birthday party officially, it's in the McTavish Room, correct?
Yep.
Okay. And now, what makes the McTavish Room so special? Why is it called McTavish?
Yeah, so it was a naming right from Sean Teven of Teven Brothers Lumber. McTavish was Sean's grandfather. And so that space historically was dentist's offices and offices. I'm told it was pretty gnarly up there. The board of directors during our mid to late 90s renovation had visited other theaters, and we are pretty lucky today that they had the foresight to add a ballroom. A lot of theaters do that, and this April, end of April, we are going to get a commercial kitchen up there for the first time, which is fantastic. So it allows us to program shows that maybe aren't the right fit for the main stage. The main stage, we've got 650 seats. We often feel if less than 200 people show up, it feels like nobody came to your party. And so we like to push programming up to McTavish. It's a lot more intimate. We can do things like jazz on the river and have dinner and music, or chamber music with dinner and music. We've also started programming local bands. There aren't a lot of venues around here. If your band can only pull 200, 250 people, so you're too big for a bar, but not big enough for the main stage of the Liberty Theater, the McTavish Room's a great place to play. We're lucky that we have it. It's so versatile. There's also weddings and banquets and public meetings. ADHDA uses it for their general meeting. It's just a really flexible space.
What's interesting, if you look at the footprint, a Sanborn map, that's a map that shows the footprint of a building, is the building actually is officially the Astor Building, mm-hmm. and it's the Liberty Theater in the Astor Building. So if you look at that, you can see all these shops all the way along 12th, all the way along Commercial, and on the upper level, which is where the McTavish Room is. So this is not unusual. All across the country, as these movie palaces were being built, the investors knew they had this highly visible anchor that would be the theater. You know, it's a nickel a show, a dime a show, or whatever. Clearly, the revenue source would be these mercantile buildings on the main floor and then the professional offices above. And yeah, it was very important for the investors that they have this cash flow that's coming from those spaces. So on the main floor, on the street level, most of those, like where the Rusty Cup coffee shop is, was a little news depot. Of course, over the years, they would change, but that's a very important part of the building. And another interesting thing, when you talk about the sound engineering that they were doing in the 1920s, very sophisticated, it's called parabola. So it's acoustically designed to have the best possible acoustics in that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So on your list of questions, there was a question you were asking me what my favorite architectural element or aesthetic element, but I want to hear from Jennifer.
Yeah.
What do you like most about the interior?
The interior? Well, I think, I see moments that most of the public, actually all of the public, don't see at the theater. I think my favorite time is after we have loaded out a show and it's very late at night and the staff is all saying goodnight and it's just our ghost light lit on the stage and just the shadows. And that's when you kind of feel like you were taken back in time 100 years. This theater with all the lights off looks almost just exactly like it did 100 years ago. And so just that moment with the ghost light on the stage, and it's a really special time.
So if you're curious out there what the ghost light is, come on one of our tours.
Yes.
That's something I learned as I was being trained for the tour. The ghost light story is a great story. So I will just very briefly share with you my favorite element. It's the chandelier. And I've looked at, I was curious about this, so I went and looked at a number of opera houses in Europe, online, of course, Vienna and Berlin and Venice and a number of cities. And there isn't anything quite like the one that we have. A lot of those are more traditional chandeliers with the arms, the multiple arms. So I remember on a tour, I was thinking, well, now what's the essence of that wonderful chandelier? Many of you have seen the chandelier. And I said, it looks to me like an upside-down steampunk wedding cake. And somehow that resonated. And I thought, yes, it is. It's an upside-down wedding cake. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's just absolutely gorgeous. And the story about the restoration is just, again, part of that wonderful narrative about how this wonderful resource for the city of Astoria was brought back to life. So, anyway, that's my favorite. And we won't even go into Joseph Knowles, all right? But if you're interested in Joseph Knowles, come on the tour, because all of the murals were designed by Joseph Knowles with some help, we're led to believe. So that's a story unto itself.
And yeah, it's worth it. It's definitely worth the story to hear that. But yeah, so just to kind of wrap up our interview, what are some things that you guys wish more people knew about the Liberty Theater?
Again, as a tour guide, I think bringing people on stage, telling the story about the ghost light, looking up into the fly, saying, back in the day, here's where the proscenium, where the vaudeville stage came to. I mean, it's very, very shallow. And then seeing the addition, seeing how that allowed for larger performances, larger orchestras, and so forth and so on. There is something magic about being in a theater and getting up on stage. You just got that, you get that sense. You're looking out at 640-some seats, you're looking up into the balcony, and you hear the story about how the seats in the balcony had to be raised so that everybody could see the stage. That's a magic moment for people, I think, is when they actually get on stage. And I mean, I enjoy talking about all the aspects. We start in the balcony, and then we come down to the main floor. But standing on stage and testing the sound and just reminiscing about some group that you had seen or you know they're coming up and how that would be to be on stage with Colin Malloy or with David Sedaris or whoever, Pink Martini, it's just really kind of a thrilling spot for people. So I like kind of end up, that's sort of the last stop on the tour, but that's a magic place for people.
I think I would want people to know, again, how meaningful it is to have every hand in this community has been part of the theater. Whether they've been inside or not, so many of our performers are local. We really, for every one David Sedaris or Pink Martini, we have five local organizations that perform on our stage. All of the concert bands and orchestras, all of the dance schools, the high schools attend their proms and their homecomings at the Liberty Theater and their graduation. It is very much a community theater that we get a lot of praise for all of the big artists that we have, but really the magic behind the Liberty is just our everyday shows and our everyday community and all of the kids that are coming through. I would say we are more vibrant throughout the week than we ever are on the weekends. But that's what most people see. It's wonderful to have this community around us.
Thanks for inviting me to the interview. I've learned a lot from Jennifer. And
I have learned a lot from you too, Eric.
Feeling is mutual. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yes, I'm really grateful you guys came on. Thank you both. Can I have you both introduce yourself one more time?
Sure. I'm Jennifer Crockett. I'm Executive Director of the Liberty Theater.
And I'm Eric Wheeler. I'm a volunteer at the Liberty Theater.
Thank you for tuning in to The Preservationists. The Preservationists airs every third Tuesday of the month at 9:30 a.m. right here on KMUN. I'd like to give a special thanks to this month's guests, Jennifer Crockett, the Executive Director at the Liberty Theater, and my co-host Eric Wheeler, a volunteer tour guide at the Liberty Theater. I'd also like to give a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the staff, volunteers, and members of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society. And thank you to Camila Swerdloff for producing the theme song of The Preservationists. And thank you for tuning in to The Preservationists. And remember, anyone can be a preservationist. The Preservationists is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomist Ray, featuring co-host Eric Wheeler. Until next time, I'm Astronomist Ray, and thank you for tuning in.